Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm your host, Shaney, and this is The Leadership Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet, and we make the long-awaited shift from rhetoric to results. I promise I'm not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you get your shift together. Let's do this.
Welcome, Leadershifters, to another episode of The Leadershifter Show with yours truly, Shaney. Today's guest is someone I've been wanting to have on the podcast for years now, folks. It's Beverly Bev Kay, who is a prolific author in the leadership space. In fact, I saw her speak at a Chief Learning Officer conference 9 years ago in 2012 about the book that was popular at the time and still is, Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go. And that is a principle that I stand very firmly behind and talk to clients about all the time. Among her other popular books that has just been re-released in the sixth edition is Love 'Em or Lose 'Em, Getting Good People to Stay. And this is a staple, folks. If you don't have this book, get it and get the sixth edition, because it has been updated to reflect our new world of virtual and hybrid working context and to be even more focused on DEI, inclusion, belonging. And so it is my absolute privilege to have Bev on the show today. Oh, and did I mention she also received a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2018 by ATD, the Association for Talent Development. So, you know, we've got a real pro with us today, folks. Bev, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Great to have you. So tell us a little bit about how you got into this space in the first place, because you're a stalwart. And one of the things I've appreciated about your voice over the years, don't take this the wrong way, white guys, is that you're not a white old white guy. You're a woman with a fresh voice and a bit of an irreverent perspective. And you don't use boring book titles. You use clever, catchy, memorable ones. And you've been doing that for years, since before it came popular by, you know, marketing gurus like Seth Godin to name things like purple cows, right? So right. Tell us, like, how you got there.
Right. You know, one, I have to give credit to my publisher for most of my books, except for two early ones. The publisher said, Beverly, the title should tell it all. Not the subtitle, the title. Mm. So people look at the title and say, got it. And of course, I asked him, well, then why do we put anything into the pages in between? You know, let's just get a good title. But each of the titles, you're right. Love 'Em or Lose 'Em says it all. Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go. Another book is Up Is Not the Only Way. And another book is about stay interviews that prevent exit interviews. So I am on a thing with titles that tell it all. And I also have always been on a thing with give managers something doable.
Yes.
That I think managers now are busier than they have ever been. Mm-hmm. And they need a quick try this, try that. And my heart goes out to them, because I think the pressure is more so. And the pressure is, you know, beware diversity. Are you belonging? Are you doing all these things? And also getting the widget made, right, that has to be made. So I really got into it You know, in my beginning days, I was a college dean.
No kidding.
I have a background in college administration, and I worked at colleges that I never could have gotten into. I worked at student affairs and housing, but I watched brilliant students think that if I'm an A student at an A school, there'll be an A line I stand in, and I'll have an A life. And many did, these were great schools, did not have a contingency plan.
I missed that memo.
Right. And I think I had that in my head when I finally had a chance to go to grad school. And I chose the world of career development to study. Mm-hmm. And that was in the 70s, before anybody was looking at organizational career development.
Mm-hmm.
And I was determined to talk about not only career mobility, other ways to move than up, but about what a good career system looked like.
Yes.
That built a development culture.
Yep.
So for the first maybe, I mean, it's been forever, for all my career, I'm interested in career from two points of view. One, from the individual point of view.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what can I do to do my own planning and homework and asking, et cetera?
Yeah.
And then managers, what can you do to ask some great questions that give you a fuller picture of what this individual has to offer? So that was the early thinking. And so it was the individual I thought I saw as the spark,
mm-hmm.
the manager as the support, not the answer machine, and the organization as providing the systems and the structure, like a 3S model.
Right.
That had to work to make development work.
Absolutely, it does. It, because you can have all the ambition in the world and be self-starting, and if you don't have a manager and are working in an organization that supports it and gives you the tools you need to succeed, then it's only a one-legged stool.
Right. Well said.
Yes. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I love how you shifted from college dean to master's degree to becoming the guru that you are in the leadership space. And Leadershifters, I don't know if you know this, but Bev founded a company over 40 years ago called Career Systems International and decided to sell it. And I'm gonna tee it back up to you to talk about why that shift, and then take us up through the point at which you decided, I ain't done yet.
Right.
And what shift came next?
So it became obvious to me after decades leading a company that there's a lot that entrepreneurs and founders carry on their shoulders. It's all those salaries. It's all of those,
mm-hmm.
I want. And, you know, I mean, I wrote a book about retention. I want to keep everybody. I wrote a book about career. I want everybody to grow. So at a certain point, I did sell it to two of my employees who were perfect, because one was the head of global sales and the other was the head of all of our trainers, of all of our associates. And so I'm still working with them and I'm still doing that work. But it was after a year of depression, it was kind of fun to go back to being a solopreneur and having just a teeny organization, but still talking about those same, very same arenas. and they're all still important. They always were. They've ebbed and flowed over those years. But I think now engagement is more critical than it even was 20 years ago when the book first came out.
Right. I love that. And you're eating your own cooking, so to speak, because you were realizing what you wanted as a contributor in this world, and the systems that you had built no longer supported that, right? You maybe wanted less stress and more freedom. And right. So you took the steps necessary to create a new system that did work for you.
Right.
And, you know, I work with so many clients, especially executive coaching clients, who feel obligated to just continue in the system that they've built, either because of obligation or ego. And right. So I love hearing about, it's like, you know what, it's not about, you know, it's about, am I happy? And not about what do other people think?
Right.
And
right.
I love, and so I want to share with listeners what you wrote on your website about this. I'm not retired. I'm rehired right. By myself, for myself. So leadershifters, if this is resonating for you, that you're feeling stuck in the company you built or the team you built, and it's not what you want anymore, you don't have to retire. You don't have to make concessions. Figure out what you do want. And if that is to be an entrepreneur and work for yourself, like let's figure it out. There's people out there like Bev and me who can help you do that. Not a shameless plug, just a fact.
Right, right. And, you know, I will say it's not easy.
No.
No, I didn't hop right out of owning a company and running a company to going back to almost my roots. But when you get there, you can like breathe and say, you know, that was the right journey to take. But while you're in the journey, it isn't easy. My friend, longtime friend, Bill Bridges, who passed away years ago, wrote a lot about transition.
Okay.
And he described—
Oh, the Bridges model of transition.
Right, right, right.
I know it. I just was talking about that with a client this morning. Okay.
About
Twilight Zone, weird.
Right, right. Right.
No, the Bridges model you're talking about.
That's his model. And he talks about the neutral zone.
Yes.
Being between where you are and where you're going. I call it the space between the trapezes. When you haven't let go and yet you're grabbing on to a new one.
Yes.
So if any of your readers haven't grabbed one of his books, and his wife is bringing all of those books up to date and doing a great job at that. So I recommend Bill Bridges.
So what would you say are a couple of things you learned that you could share with our listeners for getting you to that point where it's like, okay, I'm going to let go of this one, and I'm going to be airborne for some period of time before I grab the other one, for the courage to do that?
You know, maybe it's keeping a note in front of you saying, remember, Beverly, you're airborne. Remember, it's the neutral zone. Don't fight it. Swim in it a little bit. Or as long as you can hold out. And I think there are a lot of coaches out there who can help us through that transition time.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to not be afraid to reach out. And if hiring a coach is out of your budget, then it's a pal. It's a friend.
Yep.
Because what I've had in my entire career are great support groups.
Yep.
You know, I was a late blooming mom. I didn't start till I was 45. And so I had a mommy support group, you know, and I have a support group of women entrepreneurs who own companies like I did and I still do, who support each other. And I think all of those are essential to help us through those transitions.
Yes. And what I love about what you're saying is it's okay to ask for help and support. Like, even though it's you going through the transition and you in that space between, doesn't mean you can't, you know,
exactly.
have a dotted line to a support group or a friend yeah. or a coach and use the sticky notes to help yeah. change the talk track from fear to excitement or whatever the case may be. Because again, like it goes back to something we were just talking about, which is like people feel like there's like an obligation, like, oh, I don't want to bother people or,
right,
oh,
right, right.
you know, like people will question if I ask for help that I don't have my shit together. Right. And it's like, no, let go of the ego. It's okay.
Right. And in fact, others will be touched that you, who looks like you have your shit together, are asking them for help.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard, especially, yep. you know, I am known for being a career guru. How could I have been stuck, you know, in my career? And I'll tell you, because it's a great story, and I'm sitting in my home office, how I got unstuck.
Great.
I got sent a major sign, if you can believe that. And I had a year of suffering and went on a vacation, which was good. The day I came back, a sewer pipe broke above my office and caved in the entire ceiling.
Holy cow.
Polluted everything in my office. Now, I have a whole suite of offices in my home, only my office. And it had to be gutted and everything had to be thrown out.
Wow.
And all my friends said, Beverly, this is a cosmic message. And
if there ever was one, right? I mean, the analogy couldn't be more clear.
Right. And it helped me say, okay, like, let me move on. And I don't want anybody else's ceiling to fall in.
Yeah.
It did loosen my grip on what I was doing and open myself up to the opportunities. You know, in one of the books, I talk about being opportunity-minded or opportunity-blinded.
Ooh.
And I think a lot of us go through life with those, you know, blinders on, like the horses use when they don't want them to look, you know.
Yes.
And we don't see opportunities that are right in front of us. So I had to become more opportunity minded myself.
Right. So, right. Because it's easier said than done. And it's like anything, it's easier to see it clearly with other people than when it right. relates to yourself. And so you had like a metaphorical ceiling collapse on your office to shake you to right. your core to say, okay. And I picked up this term from CRR Global, the Center for Right Relationship, where I did some team coaching training called ORSE. Those signs that you talk about, they call them cosmic flirts.
Cosmic flirts. I like that.
Right? And, you know, I don't know if sewage leak is a flirt, but, certainly the picking up the messages, if we think about them as cosmic flirts, we're going to maybe pay a little bit more attention to them. And so, again, folks who are listening, What signs are you missing? What things are so obviously in front of you that you're blinded by instead of seeing the opportunity?
Right.
It's a really, really great point. Thanks for that, Bev. So let's talk a little bit about some of the updates to Love 'Em or Lose 'Em that you feel were most important for this sixth edition. What are a few of the additions, changes, et cetera, that went in there?
Right. You know, every time, and the book has, the first edition was 1999. So think about the changes we've been through over those 20 years and think about the surround sound that's around us now.
Yep.
And that surround sound says remote like it never said before.
Mm-hmm.
That surround sound says inclusion.
Yep.
Belonging like it never said before. And that surround sound says wellness, well-being, like it never said before. And I don't want to say that Love 'Em is an answer to everything or a Swiss Army knife of sorts, but what we tried to do there through rigorous research was to say, what are some things managers can do to engage, retain, include, support through remoteness, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we took all of that data and we said, how can we make this an easy, quick, to-do book for managers?
Great. And when you say it's a Swiss Army knife, it really is because it's structured A to Z.
Right. And a Swiss Army knife does many things.
Yeah.
So in order to teach it, because we got 26 different practices for a busy manager, we divided those practices into three major, if you will, clusters of chapters. And one was development. And we said that an engagement-focused manager, a talent-focused manager, really knows that people have to grow if you're going to keep them.
Mm-hmm.
And six or seven chapters fit there. And then we said a talent-focused manager, a talent-focused leader, has to build relationships constantly so that people want to stay. And then we, in six or seven chapters fit there. And then we say a talent-focused leader also has to build a culture that people want to come to and live in.
And which is part of the system.
Right, fit there, right. So that's how we were able to teach the course and deliver it around the country. And in the sixth edition, we're just pumping up how when you engage someone, my hunch is you do it by including them. You do it by showing them they belong, whether or not you use those words.
Yep.
So maybe it is a Swiss Army knife in that you can open a can and you can cut, stab, something, whatever.
Yep. Not a can of whoop ass, can of love.
Right. And that word love, you know, when we said we wanted it in the title 20 years ago, you can imagine the publisher said, well, I don't know about that.
I can only imagine. Yes.
It's a business book, and we had to insist because love meant a myriad of notice and recognize and applaud and say hello to, etc.
Yes, exactly.
And the back of the book to this day says, admit it, you love them, even if you don't use that word. They are your critical talent.
Yeah. You know, it's a shame that English doesn't have more gradations of the word love the way some of the romance languages do. Like Spanish, there's three or four, maybe more right. ways to say love, and only one of them is like that pure romantic love right. and chemistry. Right. Exactly. And, you know, and so that's one of the challenges with using the word love in the American workplace, at least, is, you know, people go there and it's like, no, it's not about romantic love. It's about empathy right. and humanity and treating people like you want to be treated. And
precisely. And, you know, you're reminding me that in the alphabet, the J is for jerk. And the subtitle is Don't Be One.
Yes, I love it.
We have a whole section on jerk behaviors. And we knew we had to write that because when we looked at exit interviews, mm-hmm. we followed people to the next company and we said, why did you really leave? And they said, my boss was a jerk. And I couldn't take it anymore. And we said, well, how so? And they gave us 55 jerkitudinal characteristics.
Jerkitudinal. Oh, my God. My favorite new word.
Right. And what reminded me of the story was when I spoke in Athens, they gave me 18 words that stood for jerk in Greek. So there are nuances of love and of maybe the opposite, being a jerk. Right.
18 words. Wow. although I'm sure we could come up with 18 words in English as well if we really tried.
I'm sure we
and
could.
It wouldn't be that hard. That's pretty funny. I just lost my train of thought because I was laughing so hard about the 18 words. There was something you said about jerk. Oh, yes. Okay, now I know. So I make it a point to tell every one of my clients about stay interviews. And so I love that you were an early advocate of this, if not even coined the term. And, you know, I liken it to this, like managers and leaders are spend way too much time on the poor performers or the mediocre performers and not nearly enough time with the stars. And that's like a coach only coaching their like third string and ignoring their bench and like they're coaching their bench or their third string and ignoring their starters. Right. So we need to be having these stay interviews. And so I'm curious, from someone who's been talking about it for this many years, what are your favorite stay interview questions?
One is coming straight out with it and saying, you matter to me. I don't want to lose your talent. Tell me what's most important to you with this job. It's like, why do you stay? Nowadays, I know you have choices. And when we suggest that to managers, and yes, we did coin the term, we just never trademarked it. That was our mistake. But when we say that to managers, they say, well, what if I ask? And they say dollars, or they say that promotion, and I can't give it. Aren't I in worse trouble? And we say, no, you just tell the truth and say, I can't deliver on that. Not now.
Right.
Tell me what else really matters to you. And I'm determined to find some things that I can get my arms around.
Yes.
And don't be afraid to ask. And don't Absolutely. Be afraid of what the answer is.
Right. I love that. And of course, sure, you know, money to a certain level motivates people. But so much research over the years has shown that there's, you know, declining marginal utility of it after a certain amount, and that what really motivates people are a lot of intrinsic things too, and like, don't be afraid to tap into those.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Love it. Oh my God, Bev, this has been such a fun conversation
Good.
For me. You know, you're one of my heroes in this space, so I really, really appreciate your time. How can folks either find you, and or what's the best way to buy the book, even if it's just Amazon.
Right, right. Yeah, Amazon, bookstores, all of them. And my website is just bevk.com. And the books are there and we talk about them. And I am still doing major keynotes on the subject. I'm still doing easy conversations around the subject with an audience. And we still have wonderful training to offer of all kinds.
Great. Thank you for taking the time. Leadershifters, I hope you got as much out of this as I did, especially if you're looking, excuse me, of course, I'm wrapping up and I start coughing.
I know.
You're looking to figure out how to retain those rock stars from the person who coined the phrase, stay interviews. How can you talk to your people? How can you as a leader support them? How can you help shape the culture of your team and the organization so you have the right systems? And if you're one of those people who is feeling stuck, are you open-minded or, God dang it, or are you being opportunity blinded? Do you need help and support getting yourself unstuck? And by all means, pick up the sixth edition of Love 'Em or Lose 'Em, the Swiss Army knife of engagement books. It was so amazing to have you on the show, Bev. Thank you so much. And Leadershifters, thanks again. We'll see you next time.